St. Paul and St. George people, we kid ourselves because St. George uses one F. Mm-hmm. I've got two Fs on there. And the reason why that was because of the mail service in the early days.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody used to order from Seattle, from Sears and Roebuck. And we had same names. Mm-hmm. So for St. George, they adopted one F so they wouldn't confuse it, you see. And St. Paul, they use two F's. So today, we say, well, St. Paul people use two F's because they stutter. They stutter.
Well, welcome again, ladies and gentlemen. We expected that there would be some comings and goings on the panel, and I want to welcome Francis Degnan, who is joining us this morning, and I hope that she will feel as free as the rest of you have done to participate in the discussions as we go along. I asked some of you to to speak yesterday, and maybe we could just start off this morning with any of you who might wish to speak, and then we might consider some of the questions that Rosita Worrell and Chuck Smyth and I had typed up yesterday after the meeting, just to see if it would be worthwhile to pursue these questions for a little longer this morning. That's why we had them distributed, so you could take a look at them. Maybe we could start off this morning by asking Lily McGarvey to offer us her views on some of the matters we've been reviewing yesterday and today.
Good morning. It's an honor to be sitting here with such an esteemed gathering. Going back to before the land claims became an act of Congress, in the Aleutians, there was not much communication. Some of our biggest problems were transportation and communication in that area at that time. So we did not hear too much about the forming of a group like AFN. The grassroots people in the villages certainly didn't hear anything. A few prominent people were able economically to make their way into Anchorage to attend some of the meetings, but they had to have spoken for themselves. There was no communication to the most remote villages, and as I said, the grassroots people did not have their say, I do not feel. One of the things that I guess the Aleuts are concerned about, because throughout history, the Aleuts have had many happenings or events that impacted on their personal, family, and community lifestyles and changed their way of living, changed their outlook. It's really been a tragic history. And the land claims was another big impact. One of the things that started out was enrollment. The Aleuts, through certain events, closest to the land claims was World War II, where they were disrupted, resettled. A lot of them did not come back to the islands, and enrollment was a big problem. Those that were living in other areas of Alaska, like Southeast Anchorage, were enrolled by those people living in those areas and were told, well, you're living here now, so you should or must enroll to this area. So we have many Aleuts enrolled to other regions. And also, we have a lot of Aleuts scattered throughout the lower 48. So a lot of those who did not really know what they were doing, so they say, enrolled to the 13th region. I think if we could redo the enrollment and give those Aleuts their choice, a lot of them would come back to our region. They did not realize at the time that I guess they were disrupting a tribe, so to speak. by enrolling to become Tlingits or Cook Inlet natives, they're separating themselves from the Aleuts forever, unless the enrollment is redone. Congress said that we must be corporations, both regional and village. So all of a sudden, people, some of us could hardly spell corporation, were all of a sudden managing corporations. We became boards of directors. We became presidents, secretaries, vice presidents, treasurers of million-dollar corporations. It's just as if somebody went down on the street of Anchorage, picked anybody coming up the street and say, hey, you're a corporation president, or you're a corporation secretary. There was no provision for any type of training to really show us what a corporation was, how it should be run. So we have struggled. Some of us are failing. Some of us are succeeding. I'm not sure the Alaska Native Claims Settlement Act was not set for failure. But in spite of them, some of us are succeeding, and I think in the end we all will, if we work together. I am president of the Alaska Native Women's Statewide Organization, and we are concerned with strengthening our families and our communities and preserving our language and heritage. The Land Claims Act had a very big impact on families. The new movement towards developing corporations took a lot of people away from their families and their communities. A lot of men spent weeks and months away from their families out of necessity, trying to get the act passed in the first place, and then afterwards trying to iron out their corporations and set a path for themselves to follow. There are a lot of families that broke up because of this big disruption. Some families just could not withstand that new separation. In the past, families have been separated by subsistence hunting, men going away from villages for weeks and months at a time. They're separated by the boarding school program, being away for sometimes years at a time until they finished school before they came back to their families and their villages. They were separated during the big TB epidemic, when families were sent miles away to hospitals for years to recuperate or to die. Under the Land Claims Act, people were separated again. And as I said, some families could not withstand that. And in the villages, people had to elect boards of directors. And in a small village, you have the village corporations, you have the IRAs, you have the village councils, you have the school boards, you have the community school committees, you have the health committees, and sometimes just a small group of people are doing all these things, and it becomes almost too much. And they feel overwhelmed. And maybe it's not their fault, but sometimes they can't do a good job at all of them. And sometimes they don't quite understand what it is they're supposed to do, because nobody has really explained it to them and drawn it out, drawn a picture for them. One other thing that affects families is the provision that nobody who was born after the passage of the Act could become enrolled. So we have families with one child enrolled and the rest of the children not, or maybe two or three enrolled and three or four not. And it's hard to explain to those poor little guys why they can't say they're enrolled to the Aleut region or some other region, and that they can't ever be. It's really a hard thing to explain to children, and it's really hard to explain to the families sometimes too. In reference to land, the families and the villages sometimes can't understand why they can't call their land their own anymore. They've used that land since time immemorial. But if they did not select it under the Allotment Act, then it's taken over by the village corporation or somebody else. And the Allotment Act was not advertised to Alaska Natives. We and the Aleutians did not hear of it until just before the land claims was passed, when they suddenly warned us, if you don't get your allotment registered, then you lose it because the act cancels that. And I, for one, had never heard of it, and I was gone from the village at the time they warned us to get into it, as well as a lot of other Aleuts. So there are very few Native allotments that were selected in the Aleutians. Through no fault of their own, they just didn't know about it. BIA kept away from the Aleutians. We never heard of them. Maybe that's a blessing, but we did not know about the Allotment Act. And those few who luckily did get into the under the wire and did select some land are now being told that, yes, they can have the land, but it's not really theirs. They can't really do much about it because it has to be surveyed before they can do much in the way of development or anything. And if they hire a private surveyor of their own, that doesn't count. It has to be a government surveyor. And they say that it'll be 5 to 10 years before they can get out there. I think that's all I will say right now. I see some questions here that I might answer later, but right now.
Well, thank you very much, Ms. McGarvey. Before we turn to the questions and to further discussion, would anybody else like to speak? Mr. Tialana, Mr. Iwa, Mr. Perdue?
Thank you, Your Honor. Thank you for the opportunity and the invitation to appear before the hearings. I am like the most of the natives that are here from the beginning. I am not here to talk about myself or what I've done, although my ancestors going way back to my great-great-grandfather owned the land in Kaikuk River. My grandfather. So I kind of feel the right to be here and representing the people that can't be here. The beginning, I think one of my aspirations were that this land belonged to my grandfather and my people back to 1851 and before that. He roamed that land with his people all the way up the Kaikuk River. So when it came to this, I looked from one side of the mountain to the other, and I had the Bureau of Indian Affairs claim that land, because there was it's sacred land. We had no graveyards. Land belonged to the people. So sooner or later, stayed awake most of the night, woke up thinking about it this morning, things that I wanted to say. So I've been mulling it over since 4:30 this morning. Besides the land, that nature, I spent a lot of time in the village of Kaikuk, Nularu. I wanted at that time to see them have a better living, better education. But I think some of the problems that are being imposed on the people in the village is there doesn't seem to be any communication between the people, that shareholder in the village, and a large corporation. People out there that own share want to have a one-room house built, and they have to go to the bank to borrow the money. When they have all that money, and they say they can't even see the people that are in the corporation. And I'm kind of disappointed that some of these members in this white tower of theirs are not here representing the people and speaking out the problems of the native land claims that it has imposed. I have a position paper that was drawn up by some of the members that weren't invited, Fairbanks Native Association. And I will read it, and then I'll continue with my presentation. Many other Alaska Natives who are not present today have much to give such an event as this. I hope they too can send their comments in writing. 20 years ago or more, movements began happening on our behalf in regards to our land and future. We all know that before then, and perhaps today, we have been ruled by the federal government under Department of Interior, Bureau of Indian Affairs. None of our people had any input or involvement, except for the very few who were paid by the Bureau of Indian Affairs. Millions were spent by the Bureau without growth of our people economically, educationally, or socially. A reservation was to be established about then. Thank God that came to a sudden stop. There has been a land settlement in the state of Alaska. It may not be as it should have been, but it is a settlement between the United States of America and the native people of Alaska. It will only work with the involvement of our own people. It will only work. Education is a key solution to our concern. And again, that is why we formed an association in the early 1960s. The Fairbanks Native Association. Yes, since the settlement, education has been sought by many more of our native people, but not early enough. What are some of the concerns, as it always has been, concerns our native people and will continue to be? Number one, the involvement of native people, including working in the corporations, on the board, committees, etc. Number two, changes in the rules of each corporation by amendments. Three, protection, and I think this is the most important part of what's wrong with the settlement. Protection for the corporation and shareholders by learning about the corporation and its importance. Involvement in the corporations. Restrictions from land cannot be sold or lost. Example, to land banks, trusts. It's protection from taxation. The small village corporation are in need of technical assistance. They are too small and spread out too far apart to be able to function without too much cost. Technical assistance can be provided by grants for land activities, for audits, for financial advice, for shareholder communication, for assistance in policy making. It is not easy, simple situation. It is a very complex and difficult situation. We Native people must be involved and work at this. We have worked at past problems and have eventually come out solving them. I mentioned education because we had majority, like all the children of Alaska, being educated in Oklahoma, Oregon. Children were away from their family 9 months out of the year. I think that a handful of people, with the help of a lot of the Bureau of Indian Affairs personnel, we brought those children back to being educated in Alaska with their families. I'd say in the beginning, we had a lot of, there was only a hand, like Mr. Garvey's, a handful of people that were doing all the work. I think, some of the problem lied, I don't think I said before one of our conventions, that there were a lot of natives that are natives today that wouldn't admit they were natives until the land claims came along and smelled money, then they all became Indians or Eskimos. But now you can't even touch them. They're sitting on the ivory tower, not protecting and fighting for the rights of the people and, you know, that need protection. I don't know where they're even at. I understand that there were invitations sent out to them. I haven't been involved the last few years as much as I have been in the past, because I have my own business to attend to. A lot of it with during the land claims, money came out of our pockets, like Mr. Ketchler mentioned, Mr. Frank. It was out of our own pockets. But we don't regret doing it. We did the best we could with what we had to work with. Yeah. Some of us, I know, like I say, I go home and sometimes in the summertime spend the summer with my family, my native people in the village. I fish with them. And once in a while I go up the Kaikuk River and roam the land that my father and I used to walk, hunting fish, have muskrat nuts and kidneys for breakfast, fish guts. The land belonged to my great-great-grandfather. His name, Indian name, is Dalmagaga. Translated in English, it means big man from Dalby. Now it looks like 1991, Uncle Sam is going to repeat his history and take the land back because we didn't have any money to pay the taxes. I don't exactly, I think I'm running out of time. I think that expressed the main problems that we are faced with, and I hope that in your deliberations, you would give those problems an honorable suggestion or recommendation in your findings. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you, Mr. Perdue. Mr. Ewan.
Good morning. Everybody can hear me? Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm glad you invited me. This gave me an opportunity to express, I think, a deep appreciation of our native leadership, prominent native leadership, I mean by John Borbidge and Emil Nadi, Don Wright, all these people that are sitting up there, Francis Dignan. I think in the villages, few times that I know of, it has been expressed that there's deep appreciation for the effort during the land claims. I realize that it was a monumental legislation for the native people, and I think that we are remiss in not expressing our appreciation for these prominent leaders. I got involved in the land claims about 1968, largely just because I was available. I started working for a rural cap statewide at that time, and this gave me an opportunity to attend meetings, so I more or less became a delegate to the AFN, and I represented that area during that time. I just want to touch briefly on some of the things that I heard expressed and what I saw at the time. The biggest problem that I saw at the time when we first started was money and lack of village leadership. Our area being small, we couldn't express our opinions very well. So we relied on the leaders, such as you see up there. I really, and this is where I appreciate the effort of our leaders. I don't think all natives were represented at all these meetings. Couldn't be. All the regions, all villages. Due to lack of funds, as has been mentioned before, there's certainly a lot of things that were left out or wasn't discussed because of time pressure. I think Don Wright mentioned a very important thing during the land claims, and that we were under tremendous pressure to meet a deadline before the committee completed its hearings. All gathered native leaders throughout the state, scattered across the large states such as Alaska. It was difficult. Communications was not as good as it is today, that's for sure. Traveling was hard. And above all, I appreciate the sacrifices that the native leaders made during this effort. It was a tremendous personal sacrifice. I feel I've heard of divorces and a lot of not so good things because of this great push that we put on during that time. Our region, being small, we relied on the understanding, empathy of the that we knew that these leaders had. I'm very thankful. Again, I mentioned time pressure. Don stressed that we didn't have time to go back and to the village and ask whether this was okay. It'll take 2 days to explain, in some cases anyway, what this part of the legislation was concerned with. I remember some very heated discussions on at AFN board meetings concerning land loss basis. Whether it's money or land, I think the land won in most cases. Being a small region with few people, we would benefit more by getting more land than I thought by getting money. And I think I was right. We did well in that area during the land claims. I'm thankful that I had some support on that board member being sort of minority on that board. Overall, I think the land claims had a positive effect here in the state. Our region, I know, is doing a lot of things that it was not able to do prior to the land claims. I'm sort of jumping around from my notes. Some mention was made about by John Barbage, and I think again by Ralph Perdue, which I feel is very important in the future, and that's in the near future. Right now, it should have been going on is the education of our shareholders. I think that we have to make a push to educate the natives way down at the village level about the issue of 1991. I know in our region, having become involved in the last few years, we are making that effort. We're trying to educate our native villages on what exactly we are, where we're going, what we're going to do, our goals. And have the goals changed since 1971, I think was one of the things that's written here. I think basically they're the same, but the way we're achieving them may have changed. I think we want better educated natives, especially in my area, I know that. I feel that being small, you have few people to choose from, and that's either they all go to school, be trained. I think jobs was a big, very important thing in many villages. It's still important today. Although we have a construction company and other means of employment in our area, we still can't employ all our shareholders that are available for work. I think our effort is going to continue in that area. I think I have just about ran out of things to say. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Yuan. I wonder, Mr. Starr, since you perhaps go back farther than anybody at the table, whether you wish to say something at this stage. Might you hand the... Yes.
Thank you. First, I want to talk about a long time ago when there was no white people here. There's some natives here that I want to talk to too, you know. And natives always did, I see where always they talk about their land before the white man came. The tribes, at different times, with a big population here in Alaska, very big, a big population like that would have to have certain amount of land to live on, to hunt. In this cold country, they didn't farm like they did in some parts of the United States where they raised corn. This is where they took pick up plants, meat and fish. And so when they talk about their land, they say that the certain amount of natives in different tribes of different places have certain amount of land to hunt on. And far as I know, they never had any trouble about their hunting grounds, and they didn't say, we own this and we're going to sell that. They didn't say that. But they were trying to raise their children generation after another. So the Indians always did talk about, and I want to remind you of this, that this is not the first time or the land claim or anything. 1947, I'll tell you a little about the land claim. 1947, I was living over at Lickman Schumana. I moved over there 1945 from Tanana, Elizabeth John. He was about the last Indians from that part of the country. And at one time, there was quite a lot of them. I went down to Lake Minnesota. Sometimes I had a landing one time, and I think it was around 1950, though, but 1947 anyway. I'm telling you about this. I went down to get some food. I generally buy food from the trappers because they have an airfield there, and they order food. That's how I was supplying my family. Here I got a bunch of materials from the Congress of American Indians, the Alaska Native Brotherhood. And there's another big organization in New York, I forgot the name of it, that was run by rich people. And they want the Indian rights, quite a lot of rights that each should have. So they put money into this. I keep getting it to 1950. So finally around 1950, I started to, whenever I come to Nenana, I put a sign up, not a post office, never sign my name. I said to the natives that you gotta let talk your land sooner or later. That the government wants you to talk about your land, while the natives talk about their land. So, maybe every winter I come once or twice to Nenana, and I put up a meeting. About the third winter, there begin to be few coming there. And some of them was white people too. And finally, I guess they found out that I was talking about land at the university through Charlie Pivis. Well, I got a couple of ladies there that one is, they're both gone. One was a professor of English. And if Al was there, or maybe Don, you remember the name? One of his name was Jensen, and she was teaching school there too. So we started work on it from about 1951, 1952 till 1961. And 1961 was cold winter. I was working for railroad then. And you must have known me talking around the railroad, so any place I go, I'm talking about the natives will have to talk about their land. The railroad officials must have known that I gotta be near town, so they got me from, I've been all over quite a few places on the railroad, you know. They sent me up to North Pole. That was a cold winter. I remember the railroad. I went down to the Nanan, and when I came back, the wheel was froze around the university. Another time I went down and I came back on a bus, and the wheel was froze around the university. It was so cold that winter. And just think about it, me living way up there, and I, with all my travels, I traveled mostly in the United States and Canada. And I never did drive a car of all cold winter like that. It was awful anyway. Me making my way down there to Fairbanks, and we had a meetings in a lot of different places, different houses. We didn't have no money. We didn't have no money for postage. We didn't have no way of getting. What we was trying to do is try to get the villages, the natives interested. And I wrote to different villages in Alaska. I asked who the chief, who the council at the different villages. And you know that I never got a letter from any villages at all, including North Slope. Even Hobson was living there. And I wrote him a good letter, told him that we gotta talk about our land. And he didn't get the answer. So in 1961, the Quero was meeting, they told me, you might, we're not sure. The government might give you a little money for taking your land. They might give you a little land.